From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, the state Senate and Assembly debate school safety and gun control. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on two more candidates interested in a run for governor. And the city of Plattsburgh has a cryptocurrency problem. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Things got heated on the New York State Senate floor this week over a debate on bills that majority party Republicans say will improve school safety. Meanwhile, the State Assembly this week passed its own set of gun control bills. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports.
New York already has some of the strictest gun control measures in the nation, known as the SAFE Act. But since the Florida incident, lawmakers from both major parties say there's more to do to prevent school shootings. The bills by Senate Republicans would redefine school shooters as terrorists, require more active shooter drills at schools, and implement sophisticated scanner technology to detect any guns that someone might try to bring into a school. Many of the measures were approved with little debate by all of the Republicans and several Democrats. But one bill did draw a pointed exchange. It's a measure to issue a new state license plate called the Guardians for Schools plate. It would raise money to help pay for armed guards at schools, mental health counseling, and security cameras. Senator Brad Hoylman, a Democrat from Manhattan, called the bill meaningless.
It is so harebrained to think that we are actually attempting to address the serious issue of gun violence with a new distinctive license plate that I'm compelled to vote no.
Senate sponsor Jim Todisco, a Republican from Schenectady, was angered by the remarks. He accused Democrats of holding a double standard. He says the Democrats don't object to armed guards at the state capitol, yet some Democrats voted against the school safety enhancement measures.
Hypocrites! Shameless! Hypocrites! Shameless! You want armed law enforcement officials in the LOB in the Capitol to protect you, but don't put them in the schools. Keep those behind the curtains.
Senate Deputy Democratic Leader Michael Gianaris from Queens called the license plate bill embarrassing in the face of the mass shootings, but says he's reluctantly a supporter.
While people are walking around our schools with military rifles, let's do a distinctive license plate. I hope it makes you happy at the end of the day, because you're doing nothing to protect our children with this nonsense.
The Senate GOP bills would not limit the purchase or sale of any guns or impose new requirements for background checks. Democrats, for a second time in recent weeks, proposed gun control bills, including banning teachers from carrying firearms at school, but those amendments were voted down, mostly along party lines. Meanwhile, in the state assembly, Democrats who lead that house passed a series of bills similar to ones backed by Democrats in the Senate. They include extending the 3-day waiting period for background checks to 10 days and establishing an extreme risk protection order that would temporarily take away the guns of people deemed a potential danger to themselves or others. Another measure would ban the possession of bump stocks. Those are the devices that convert semi-automatic weapons into virtual machine guns and were used to kill 58 people in Las Vegas last year. Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie says his members don't want to wait for another mass shooting.
This is not normal, and it has to end.
Speaker Hastie says he knows that for now the measures are not going to advance in the Senate, but he says he hopes the tide is changing for gun control laws, and he credits the Parkland, Florida students for that.
Those brave students down there in Florida, which is a very conservative state when it comes to guns, they were on the brink of convincing a Republican legislature to listen. So maybe after our Republican colleagues start to listen, they may change.
At least one GOP senator is changing their position on gun control measures. Senator Elaine Phillips, a Republican from Long Island, says in a statement on her website that she wants to ban military-style assault weapons and bump stocks and enact stricter background checks. She says as a mother of three daughters, she believes now is the time to act. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Alan,
well, the story of Cynthia Nixon and a potential primary against Governor Andrew Cuomo, Alan, has heated up a bit. Ken Lovett of the Daily News, during a storm update press conference, asked a series of questions, including about the fact that Cynthia Nixon was using Mayor Bill de Blasio's consultants in exploring a run. And this was Cuomo's response. I think it was probably either the mayor of New York or Vladimir Putin, Cuomo said, laughing loudly when asked if he thought Mayor de Blasio had encouraged a friend to run. I'm going to leave it to you, great investigative reporters, to follow the facts and ferret out the truth.
Well, it doesn't look good for the governor. It is not the kind of gravitas you would expect, David, from a sitting governor. However, I think the Nixon thing does represent a real challenge for the governor. Because if there's a primary, and if she primaries him, Cynthia Nixon will be saying a lot of things about the governor that are less than flattering. And that sets up a general election. Not only that, if there's a third-party candidacy on the part of Nixon, there'll be a lot of votes diverted. And I'm thinking that none of this is particularly good for Governor Cuomo.
Well, Alan, Cynthia Nixon was not the only candidate in the news this week in a run for governor. The Dutchess County Executive, Republican Mark Molinaro, who drove in a nor'easter last week to see the results of a straw poll with GOP county leaders, and he came out on top over the other candidate, John DeFrancisco, number two in the state Senate. But he hasn't made an official announcement that he is running, despite the fact that he's now rolling out county chair endorsements.
Look, Mark Molinaro is what I could only call a clean candidate. People like him. He's young. He's done a good job as a county executive. We've interviewed him, and we can only tell you that he'll be a formidable opponent if he runs to the governor. I believe he gets a free ride, meaning that he doesn't have to resign his office in order to run. And what that means, of course, is he has very little to lose by running. Now, Molinaro would be an ideal candidate for the Republicans in a year that Cuomo is now having more and more trouble. You referenced Cynthia Nixon. One of the reasons that Cuomo has won handily in these elections, even though upstate votes against them, is because the Cuomo name is known. And voters tend to say, oh, yeah, I know that one. I'm going to vote that way. But Cynthia Nixon is a name that is known and will be known and offers a tantalizing look into what is possible. The first woman governor, for example, the idea of somebody who is gay running for political office in New York City. So she would be, of course, a formidable opponent for the governor in a primary. He still has $30 million, David. That's a lot of money to run for office with, and you won't be able to turn the television on without hearing a quote or hearing or seeing a Cuomo ad. And so this is tough stuff for him. So now, when he is asked about this, he says, well, it's either Putin or the mayor, and ha, ha, ha. Well, that does not connote a governor who is confident in what he's doing. And he then goes on to insult the reporters and say, you're all investigative reporters, you find out. Oh, yeah, this has shades of somebody else we know who's sitting in the White House. So I think Cuomo's got a rough road here. Do I think that on the face of it, Nixon can beat Cuomo? No, not yet. Not yet. We'll have to see how that one develops. But she would be trouble for him, especially if she gets a third-party designation. Now, the obvious place to go would be the Working Families Party. But we do know that the labor unions have a large part in that decision-making, and they are close to Cuomo. But, of course, there's a woman's party. We'll see whether or not, because if there was a third party in an election, a general election, that could hurt Cuomo quite badly.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. You are are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The Police Benevolent Association of New York State says University at Albany police have their hands cuffed when it comes to executing their duty to protect and serve. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas reports the college disputes the criticism.
We contend, and it was in yesterday's Times Union newspaper, a lengthy article, that the University at Albany administration is putting its students, faculty, and staff in danger by neglecting its duties to report in a timely manner as required by the federal law under the Clery Act. They're required to report risks and dangers involving violent crimes, and they're failing to do that.
The Clery Act is a consumer protection law that aims to provide transparency around campus crime policy and statistics. Speaking on campus, PBA Executive Director and Counsel Daniel DeFedericis cited a rape in a dorm room on the campus's Dutch Quad in the early morning of October 23, 2016.
In the past month alone, 3 rapes and 2 sexual assaults were reported here to the University Police Department. While the rank-and-file university police officers believe that the students should be notified, and that's a point I want to make, they are not allowed to issue the timely warnings. It's done at a high administrative position after apparently a staff meeting is what the president's prepared remarks said to the Times Union. At 3 a.m., you can't do that. You can't give a timely warning if you have to wake administrators up.
After the 2016 rape, DeFedericis says Franklin Casatelli of Gilderland remained at large with no warning given to the campus community for 8 hours. Casatelli was later sentenced to 37 years in prison.
To put this into context, the University at Buffalo, another SUNY school, their standard is 15 minutes or less, and that makes sense. If you have a son or daughter or a family member that works here and you know of the campus knows about a violent crime, wouldn't you want them notified within minutes and not hours?
Most of the students I spoke with on campus Monday were not aware of the PBA's concerns. One said she does get occasional emails related to campus crime. DeFedericis alleges UAlbany failed students again last week following an armed robbery at the nearby campus mobile station. The suspects were reported running onto the UAlbany campus. The warning was issued 2 hours later. The Times Union reported Sunday that in mid-January, DeFedericis dashed off a letter to UAlbany President Javidan Rodriguez after Rodriguez declined several requests to meet with union officials to discuss problems, including low morale and attrition of police officers. The PBA filed a report with the U.S. Department of Education alleging Clery Act violations by the college. Rodriguez replied a week later, rejecting all allegations leveled by the PBA. University spokesman Jordan Carlio Evangelist responded to a request for comment by email, which is posted at wamc.org, along with a link to the full text of the Clery Act. DeFedericis would like to see immediate policy changes to allow police to get warnings out in minutes.
The University at Albany officials refuse to acknowledge their failings and are hiding from these facts. They're refusing press interviews. They're hiding behind carefully crafted written denials. The PBA is calling on the University at Albany administration, and specifically University President Rodriguez, to stop delaying notifications to its student, faculty, and staff.
Rodriguez's letter, which is also posted at WAMC.org, reads in part, "The university takes its Clery Act responsibilities very seriously, as our foremost concern is the safety and well-being of all members of the campus community." Last summer, claiming UAlbany police policies were jeopardizing public safety, the union cast a no-confidence vote against UAlbany Police Chief J. Frank Wiley, Deputy Chief Aaron Mall, and the university administration, stopping short of calling for anyone's ouster. Campus police at UAlbany Monday said no one was available to comment.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
Familiar faces in Saratoga Springs, New York, are expanding a Capital Region political organization that advocates for women in politics. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard explains.
The Political Action Committee Capital Women was started after the November 2016 elections. In a time of women's marches and the Me Too movement, women have a loud political voice in the Trump era. Speaking at the state capitol Thursday, Capital Women co-founder Libby Post, a regular contributor to WAMC's roundtable panel, says the PAC will endorse and financially support women and men throughout Albany, Schenectady, Rensselaer, and now Saratoga counties.
But they have to be pro-choice, pro-LGB rights, they have to be really good on a whole host of progressive issues in order to get our endorsement.
Refusing to bow out of politics, former two-term Democratic Saratoga Springs Mayor Joanne Yepsen, who did not seek re-election, will be leading the Capital Women Group in Saratoga County.
I'm going to continue to work on the issues that I care about from a policy perspective, but also pay it forward and try to encourage more good women to run for office and to really get involved in the political process.
PACs are not entirely new to Saratoga Springs politics. In 2015, the so-called Saratoga PAC raised $50,000 to support both Republican and Democratic candidates, including Yepsen's Republican challenger in the mayoral race, John Safford. The group said it would endorse candidates that sought a balance between expanding economic opportunity and protecting our environment while enhancing the economic well-being and quality of life in Saratoga Springs and Saratoga County. The group endorsed candidates based on the results of a questionnaire. It did not give directly to campaigns, but did send promotional materials to potential voters. But the group's efforts came up short. Democratic Finance Commissioner Michelle Madigan won re-election after rejecting Saratoga PAC's endorsement. Democratic Commissioner of Accounts John Frank was also endorsed by the group, but was unopposed. Two other candidates, one Republican and one Democrat, also lost their races for city office. At the time, Yepsen criticized the group. Here she is after winning re-election in 2015.
The fear in every door that I went to is either about land use issues, the High Rock Park, the golf course, or the PAC. And nobody likes the idea of an organization raising a lot of money and buying somebody's vote from them.
Yepsen contrasted her work today with Saratoga PAC.
When they were endorsing my opponent, I said, there are good PACs. Think about Kirsten Gillibrand's PAC, Off the Sidelines. That is a wonderful opportunity to raise money for other potential women candidates on the federal level. We're just taking that same concept and doing it on the local level.
Democratic U.S. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand's Off the Sidelines PAC promotes issues such as raising the minimum wage, paid family and medical leave, ending campus sexual assault, and other progressive issues. Saratoga Springs Democratic County Supervisor Tara Gaston is also joining with Capital Women Saratoga. The Saratoga County Board of Supervisors itself has just 3 women among its 23 members. Gaston is the only Democratic woman on the board.
I have some fantastic colleagues on the Board of Supervisors, but I would like to see more women there, more people of color, more diverse identities and personalities represented on the board. I think it should be more reflective of our citizenship.
On Tuesday, the Saratoga County Board of Supervisors approved its legislative agenda for the year, which includes an item to advocate against Governor Andrew Cuomo's budget amendment to bring 12-day early voting across the state. Under the legislation, each county would set up 1 polling place for every 50,000 residents. Gaston and Republican Saratoga Springs Supervisor Matthew Veach were the only 2 to vote against including the item. Clifton Park Supervisor Phil Barrett, a Republican, does not support the governor's early voting bill. He called 1 polling place for 50,000 residents restrictive.
The stance by some is that the current system is restrictive, but the solution is incredibly more restrictive. So I don't see how spending the extra money for something that's more restrictive is a good solution.
The Capital Women PAC is set to host a kickoff event in Saratoga Springs on the eve of International Women's Day on March 7th. For more information, visit WAMC.org. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. By now, you've probably heard of and maybe even invested in the online currency Bitcoin. But how are the cryptocurrencies made? apparently by using a lot of electricity. In Plattsburgh, where there are low electric rates, a couple of cryptocurrency entrepreneurs are sucking up lots of power. The mayor is proposing a law to curb the practice. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley reports.
Plattsburgh Mayor Colin Reed introduced a new local law at Thursday's Common Council meeting and set a public hearing to discuss the proposed regulation. He explained that it would impose a moratorium on commercial cryptocurrency mining operations in the city.
The purpose of this is just to allow us some time to explore this issue. We've been asked to address this by our municipal lighting division. Increasingly now, with the great use of additional power, we are put over our threshold each winter. And when we're put over our threshold, the ratepayers of the city of Plattsburgh do pay a higher electric rate as a consequence. So we want to explore these various issues, understand the effects on our ratepayers, find if there's a Public Services Commission solution to this, and we need a little bit of time to explore that.
Cryptocurrency is online digital money, probably the best known as Bitcoin. Mining is how it is released into circulation. It requires numerous computers and substantial amounts of power, so mining entrepreneurs are seeking areas with low electric rates. Plattsburgh benefits from a decades-old hydropower contract that keeps rates low. Mayor Reed says Plattsburgh sells power to industrial users at 1 to 2 cents per kilowatt hour, and that's attracting cryptocurrency ventures.
At any one time, they could be consuming between 10 and 25% of the total output in our city. As a matter of fact, we have more power being consumed by a couple of operations than by our largest industries in the city of Plattsburgh.
Mayor Reed notes that cryptocurrency businesses bring no jobs and any benefit to the community is nebulous.
They'll crowd as many small computers as they possibly can on racks after racks after racks and consume about a megawatt of power. That's the equivalent of upwards of 500 homes. And all of that energy that's going to these computers is generating heat in that room. So we feel there's fire, building code, health and safety aspects to this that we don't fully understand because this onslaught of cryptocurrency servers is so new to us. We want some time to understand it. We want some time for our MLD division to be able to sort their capacity constraints and engineering around it. But it's primarily this point, a health and safety and building codes aspect that we want to explore more fully. It's never been explored.
The high-intensity use of electricity is pushing the city above its purchase power adjustment charge quota. Reed, an economist by trade, says utilities across the country with such constraints are concerned as cryptocurrency miners seek low-rate locations.
When we go over the quota, we have to go into the spot market, and we could literally pay 100 times more for our power in the spot market than we would have to pay at a traditional wholesale rate. And that then means that all the ratepayers in the city are paying that higher rate for the overage, not just the entities that might be pushing us over the overage.
A public hearing on the proposed moratorium on cryptocurrency mining operations will be held March 15th at 5 at Plattsburgh City Hall.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1810. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Giustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.